It's 9:05, and we're calling the meeting of the Board of Directors of the Cambria Community Healthcare District to order. We have a quorum. We have Cecilia Montalvo via cell phone from where she is today. We have Bill Rice. We have Diane Kubat. We have Lori Miller and myself, Iggy Federoff. I would like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand and face the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have three of our staff, first responders here. Would you like to comment on any topic not on the agenda?
No, sir. Just here to be here.
Okay. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
So the first item is to approve the minutes from the June 22nd regular board meeting.
So moved.
Lori moves.
Second.
Bill Rice seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, the minutes of the June 22nd regular board meeting are approved. Moving then to the operations report, Tim, would you like to highlight anything?
Just the call log. I know that Mike doesn't see the administration report, but
make sure you speak up clearly so that our distant.
Just wanted to go over the calls for the month up to the year to date for this month of July. We are currently at 106 incidents with 41 transports, and it should be noted that on last weekend, although Pulse Point showed that the activity level for the district wasn't that busy, we actually ran multiple calls on the 25th in Morro Bay and Cayucas area. The medical level period wasn't in Cambria. They were actually running calls in that area. So our backup was actually Medic 21 coming from Paso if something had happened. So I thought that was something to tie into because I know everybody's been looking at Pulse Point. So and looking in Cambria specifically, it looks like we haven't been busy, but we actually are busy. We're backfilling for San Luis Ambulance in their areas.
Okay. Good point.
Kim, I have a question on the first part of your ops report. Where you talk about Unit 16, where we spent almost $9,000 in repair. What's going on with Unit 16?
Unit 16 has impellers on the top part of the intake manifold that were going out. So the check engine light came on. We got it fixed before the impeller disintegrated and then got sucked into the engine and ruined the engine itself. It was a rather pricey fix, but with that being our primary backup, we felt that we needed to get it fixed to keep that unit in service and running.
Okay, and it's back in service?
Yes.
And is Unit 21 back in service?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you're fully staffed.
We're fully staffed. We have all of our units.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Tim? Okay, hearing none. Mike, you want to cover your administrator's report and financial review?
Yes.
And you'll have to speak up.
Oh, sorry.
You might want to lower your mask just for the period of when you're speaking.
Okay. Can you hear me okay, Cecilia?
I can.
Great. Okay. Yes, look, you had a chance to review my report. I won't belabor it in great detail. Just a quick note on the COVID-19 briefing stuff. And I'm sure you're aware, I'm neck deep in this right now because it's changing day by day as far as federal, state, and local directives, and we're keeping up, but it is rapidly evolving, and I just want to note that if you hear things or whatever, or if I put out new emails frequently, it's because it's moving faster than the speed of sound at some points. And in some ways, it's being very sluggish when we're trying to get answers. So it's a challenging time, but we're on top of it. And I want to reassure everybody that we are still very safe. Our crews are in good shape. Our policies are strong. And I think at the moment, we're okay with that. Any questions about that?
Well, Director Montalvo had wanted in your goal to identify and implement a measurement tool for employee satisfaction and establish improvement goals on page 16 to indicate that we had done two employee surveys and that the results were available for any board member to review.
Yes.
But because of the sensitive nature of some of the comments, I'd prefer they remain confidential.
Yes, and that's exactly, I'm glad you reminded me. I can provide a synopsis of that to any board member who would like more detail, but yes, we've completed those surveys and we've used that information appropriately moving forward.
And you have a, shall we say, a corrective action plan for yourself that includes, for example, meeting on a regular basis with employees on a sort of what I would call a managing by walking around basis?
Yes, and we've been doing that for a number of months now, and I believe that it's shown positive results. And just like any good effort at communication, it solves a lot of problems before they start. We'll continue with that, continue to expand on that.
The good news is that I believe that item should be green. I don't know if we talked about this before. I know I spoke with Mike about it privately, but upon reflection about that next goal about staff vacancy, I think that for an organization our size, we're pretty small, that staff vacancy rate might not be, that could fluctuate so greatly. And it's usually a metric used for large companies. I'm wondering if we don't want to restate this to suggest, make a broader statement about continuing to improve our ability to recruit, because that's what this is all about. Do we attract employees? But anyway, I actually think on that next point, the goal should be changed.
Thank you, I would agree. And I believe, even prior to refresh my memory, right about this time of year, typically, or August-ish, we reset those goals and establish new goals and reevaluate them. So this might be good timing anyway not today, but in the near future, go through that.
If I might, since we're talking about employee satisfaction, go back to an item on Tim's report where we would like to establish an employee recognition program, or Tim is suggesting that, and it came about through a conversation when my son was just promoted to captain with Carlsbad Fire, and I attended his promotion ceremony and was really struck by how they took seriously recognizing people, their new hires, their people as they got off of their probationary period, and those who got promoted or had a number of years of service. And the feeling that generated not only within their employees or their staff, but with the families as well, because the public and families were welcome and encouraged to attend these ceremonies. And I think it would serve us well to do that type of recognition so that our employees truly know how much they are appreciated and the hard work and appreciate all the hard work and sacrifice that they put in taking on a job like this, where you are working long hours, you are working weekends, nights, and holidays, and what that means to your family and your family life as well.
I wholeheartedly agree that, we've had some conversations, Tim and I and yourself, and in a nutshell, it's vitally important that we bring that into play. We've done some things, Tim's done a pretty good job with that in the past, but I would very much support a more robust recognition program, because they are truly appreciated, and we need to show that. And I know the community appreciates them. I think it would solicit some very positive feedback from the community as well. So we will work on that and bring it forward.
Why don't we put that on the August agenda?
Okay.
And just come up with a proposed recognition program and what it might involve, if there are any financial incentives or benefits or whatever.
One of the things that was brought forth in the recent conversations was even new employee recognition. You know, even though they're brand new to us and haven't, done anything yet, we still recognize that they're stepping up and joining the team and want to recognize those new employees as well.
Okay.
Publicly. So we will do that. The financial, well, the trust, there was a lot of information there. We didn't receive any donations, but we did use some of the funds for Unit 21. You can see the trust balance. The financial reports, there's a couple of things that are just interesting. Our ambulance revenue was down, and we took a pretty hard look at that and just to try to determine why that is. A couple of things. There was we had some EOBs which that were supposed to come in in June, and they come until after July 1st. We don't know if that was holiday related or fiscal year end related or what was going on there, but that.
And for the record, an EOB is a payment.
Basically,
explanation of that.
Yeah, we need that to obtain payment from the insurance companies. And without that, we can't process their payment. So it's an important piece of paper, and they came in after July 1st, and then they were posted, but it doesn't count for June, unfortunately.
But now let me understand. So the cash came in, okay, before June 30th, but you didn't get the EOB to post it.
Right. So it's a procedural issue.
Did the cash really come in before June 30th?
Some of it did. It was, it comes in, but you can't post it till you have that EOB in our system.
Okay.
It's a step-by-step process, and that's the missing step.
If you could quantify that for me and just send me an email with the cash that came in that was, quote, unposted because of lack of an EOB.
Right. The other issue that came up that we've noted is we have a certain expectation of payment from these private insurance companies, and lately they've been coming in slower than normal, taking longer than normal. Again, I don't know if that's related to their end of fiscal year, but it was just a fact. And Simone's been following up with these entities and for lack of a better word, hounding them with some success, but it's problematic. Payments in July have increased already, so appears that we're back on track. Just a quick note too, Medicare. Medicare has been very sluggish, more so than normal. And so that's been an issue as well, is Medicare is not proper. We have, I think yesterday Simone told me, we have about $12,000 sitting there waiting to be paid to us for Medicare. And typically we would have received that by now. And when she's inquired about it, they just say, we're too many claims, not enough staff, yada yada. We don't get very far with that. But so the money's coming in, it's just taking longer than we normally anticipate, which is, to say the least, frustrating. Let's see what else. Call volume increased in June, which is helpful as far as finance.
The tax revenue, both the general and the special assessment, okay, they have been running behind all year. Do we have any significant increase so far in July?
Not yet, but again, typically we get a tier payment in July, which is they true up and give us what is owed in arrears. From people not paying their property taxes and so forth, the county will true it up, and then they go out. Then the county's responsible for collection.
So they only have.
Excuse me, if you could I ask if somebody jiggle the wires a little bit? I don't know if Jeff is experiencing this, but I actually have the experience that it sounds on my end that it's shorting out. I just try jiggling the wire.
Well, we didn't move anything, but I could try. It might just be cell phone related, atmosphere. Good. Jeff, are you able to hear us okay?
I do hear it cutting in and out a little bit.
Strange. Well, it's probably because it's on speaker.
Yeah.
But that's not anything we can do anything about.
Five bars, so we're getting a good signal.
Oh, wait a minute. It just got better. I don't know what you did.
Maybe.
How about setting it right on top of that?
How about
that? No, it's not that.
Is that better?
I don't know. Just keep going. Sounds like there's nothing you could do if it isn't.
Yeah.
Well, we can definitely speak up.
Yeah. I'm sorry, where was I?
You're talking about the teeter payments?
Yes, so we should get a teeter payment in July, the way things are going. Wish I could guarantee it, but I can't.
Do we stay in contact with the county?
Yes, and I have been, and they're working on it. So.
Okay.
Kind of an interesting thing to note, we've talked about this in the past, you know, on our budget there's a line item called GEMT reimbursement, which is typically zero for month or month. Year after year, we actually got payment of a little over $1,400 from GMT that dates back 10 years, actually more than 10 years, a little more than 10 years that they owed us this money, and they sent us a check, which was kind of shocking.
Okay, so I would like to point out that although we ended the year in a deficit because of the failure to receive payments on time, failure to receive the FEMA grant, which has been promised to us of some nearly $40,000,
mm-hmm.
Our cash year over year is within $1,000.
Yes.
Which, not being a finance guy, I turn to our finance man and say, is that all right? Is that good?
Just to understand, neutral. The balance that you're looking at there is from the bank statement, okay, and it does not include outstanding checks. So the true cash balance
is lower than that. Okay.
Yeah. We had budgeted, as Ziggy referred to, we budgeted $40,000 from FEMA, and reasonably expecting to have received it by now, and it's still sitting in Washington, D.C. at the FEMA home office in process. So if you, by some imagination, were to back that back out of our budget of anticipated revenue, that brings us within, you know, what we were...
Well, it would become positive instead of negative.
So, again, I don't know if that would pass the purview of our finance committee, but it is comforting in a sense. And I've been almost in daily contact with FEMA about this, and one of my greatest frustrations currently, the money goes from, once it's approved, the money's already in California, they've allocated the money for everybody. Once they approve our application at the FEMA level, it goes to the State Office of Emergency Services, and I've become good friends with that contact person in Sacramento, and he assures me as soon as it hits his desk, he will process a check. So everybody's just waiting for FEMA to pipeline it into us. And we've involved legislative people and others trying to push this along. That's where we're at. Any questions? Any other questions about my contents of my report?
Okay, hearing none, we'll go to committee reports. The only thing that I would report is that this morning I met with the general manager of the Cookie Crock and asked that they consider donating funds to both reward and incentivize our first responders with Cookie Crock gift certificates. Here's what I told him. The Cambria Community Healthcare District is endeavoring to reward and incentivize our full and part-time first responders to get fully vaccinated against SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus, especially now with the spreading of the Delta variant. The district maintains a 501c3 charitable trust for the benefit of the district. We would ask that the Cookie Crock favorably consider donating up to 34 $100 gift certificates to be used by our employees in purchasing items from the Cookie Crock. We hope that distributing these certificates to our staff will reward those who have taken the initiative to become fully vaccinated and incentivize those who have not to become so. On Friday, July 30th, we will be issuing a letter to our employees urging them all to become fully vaccinated by September 1st. If we can tell them that the Cookie Crock is donating $100 gift certificates, this may get us to 100% vaccination. Thanks in advance, and should you have any questions, please don't hesitate calling me at home, giving them the number, and then or our administrator, Mike McDonough, at the district's number. Other than that, I don't have anything to further to report. Does anybody have any
questions? He just took that under consideration, and we'll be waiting for him to get back to us.
Yes, I'm going to drop this letter off on my way home after I leave this meeting. He said he'd be there till 3 o'clock.
Terrific. Thanks for doing that.
Sure. Property and Facilities, Lori.
The Property and Facilities Committee met last Tuesday, July 20th. We had a very robust conversation and lively meeting. We are moving forward on developing the request for proposal for the pre-design work to look at facility needs as well as provide some schemes or options for what we can do to meet or to correct these deficits. We are waiting to hear back from legal regarding the RFP draft. So we're not going to be able to share that with the rest of the committee until we get back comments from Jeff, and may require a special board meeting in order to get that draft approved by the board and so that we can move forward with getting the RFP issued in a timely manner to keep us on track. I will say, and it was a very productive meeting, the work moving forward, we're getting a number of things accomplished. We have had an environmental hazard specialist come in and is currently doing an environmental hazard study on the properties, and that's kind of where we are at the moment, and I'm excited to share the RFP with everybody once we've gotten Jeff's okay.
Jeff, do you have a feel for when you might have your review completed?
Yes, I actually looked through that, and it looks generally good as far as the plan, so I'll touch base earlier today on any comments.
So, Jeff, should I plan on putting a call into you early this afternoon?
Yes.
Okay, I will do that, and... Great. That's good news.
Anything else? Any questions for Lori? Okay, hearing none. Healthcare Advocacy and Outreach, Cecilia.
I am delighted to announce that we'll have our first meeting with Diane now on the committee. We're going to meet on August 2nd, and I'll be in the process of working with Mike to develop the agenda, and I'm really happy to have her as a partner and look forward to the meeting.
Hopefully you will consider the health fair that we talked about, I think it was back in April.
Yes.
With
yes, it's on my list.
Okay, great. With Bryn Albanese, or Albanese, I should say.
And, okay. And Cecilia, I will share with you my contact with Slo County Public Health in regards to the fall prevention program they would like to offer, and then some other ideas.
Okay. I'll touch base with you, Lord.
Yeah. Okay. Or I can do it with Diane as well.
Any other comments for either Cecilia or Diane? Hearing none. Finance, Bill Rice.
We did not have a meeting in the last month.
Grants, Lori Miller.
We did not meet this past month.
Strategic planning, Cecilia.
This is an ad hoc committee of the entire board and has not met this month.
Okay. And trust fund marketing ad hoc. Bill Rice and Cecilia, I don't know if you've had a chance to meet.
We have not.
Okay. All right. Moving on then to regular business. Well, we welcome Diane Kubat. And we have... We have in our packet a discussion of Diane's, a brief discussion of her 36 years of financial and community outreach experience, but maybe Diane could say a few words about what she thinks she can bring to us.
Those years of experience. I've dedicated my life to focusing on actual human beings of an organization, which is sometimes difficult when you're dealing with so many factors, regulatory requirements, etc. But it all comes down to people. So that's my main focus, how we can help the community, continue on with the mission statement that I believe in. And I'm excited to join the amazing team here. And you all are amazing as well. I witnessed it myself, and I have to say, you know, you guys are truly heroes.
Yep.
Thank you.
And my wife and I have personally witnessed it ourselves as well in our years here. Yes, and actually, I look forward to having outreach become an important component of what we do. Of course, we haven't been able to do much outreach in the last almost year and a half, but there are things that I know Tim has been wanting to do in terms of Heimlich maneuver training, stop the bleed, and so on.
Cancel ICPR, AEDs, yeah, got that list going.
Yep. And anyway, so I look forward to having you on the board. The next item, if nobody has any questions of Diane, the next item is a review of the committee assignments. And I didn't hear any negative feedback to my assignments. One thing I don't have on here, of course, is the newly created trust marketing, trust fund marketing ad hoc committee. So I'll add those and send out the revised list. Any questions? Okay. Moving on then to agenda item E3. Tim?
Mr. President, before we start, a question of understanding. Do we not normally have any proposal to acquire capital assets, including equipment, first go through a property and facilities committee, and then a property and facility committee would then make a recommendation to the board, yay or nay?
Yes, we do. And between Lori and Tim, there was an agreement.
I was part of that too.
And Cecilia.
And Cecilia.
Yes.
To bring this to the board at this time, I think for one primary reason, and that is to get us in the queue for acquiring
Ambulance. Well, lock in that price, because it doesn't leave.
And lock in a price, yeah.
Okay, but are we going to choose today to lock in that price one of the two alternatives that are going to be presented? And are we not, in doing so, deciding which ambulance to purchase?
I suppose we are. But it's being done this way because of the price escalations that have been occurring. And because there is such a long lead time. So
we're making the decision between A or B, and at some future point when it becomes available, there's no question that we're going to purchase whatever we decide today.
That's the way I'd like it to go.
Yes.
And would that be the recommendation of the Property and Facilities Committee?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Cecilia is the chair, so Cecilia.
No, I'm the chair.
Oh, you're the chair.
Excuse me.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh. The chair, but I chimed in it for you.
It's okay.
I think we should move on here.
Cecilia, would you like to be?
No.
Again, I just wanted to understand what we're about to do.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And it doesn't. It does not involve funds in this fiscal year.
No.
Correct.
It involves funds from fiscal year 22-23.
That would be correct. That would be
correct. Right. Yep. And may I also say it does not obligate us to follow through necessarily should our financial situation change, if that makes sense. It merely gets us in the
good
queue.
Okay. And it does not obligate us to any funds until the replacement ambulance is paid off.
Yes.
Correct.
Correct. Yes.
And I believe, Jim could correct me if I'm wrong. But
speak up.
I believe that it does not, we wouldn't actually begin payment until delivery, until we got it on site.
Correct. The payments wouldn't be required until 30 to 60 days after delivery of the unit.
Okay.
Currently, the units, they're looking at a year and a half, almost a two-year turnaround because of there's such a backlog with the chip shortage. But there's also price increases, and that's why I brought it to, when we had a meeting, I brought it to Lori and Cecilia's attention.
Okay.
Because of the drastic increase and the ones that are still scheduled, slated to come.
Okay. Just wanted to understand what we're doing.
Yes. Sorry.
Okay. Tim, you want to proceed now?
Okay. So what you guys have in front of you is a proposal for two different ambulances. One is a Type 2, which is a van like 20, and I put the descriptions on it. So it's a low 90, like 20, basically the van style. It's a Ford Transit style. In that price for that ambulance is now $162,000, almost $163,000. When we bought Unit 20 back in 2019, it was under $100,000. So there's been a significant price increase. The other one you'll see is for the CCL 150 Type 3, which is the one that it's similar to our box that we currently have. And the reason why I presented this one to the board and asked for this one was because of the fact that that box is able to be what they call a box. So the patient care area is actually able to be taken off and put on a different chassis. So if you look at the cost, it's gone up from initially, it's gone up about 20%. So it used to be about So it was $199,402.30 in February, and now it's $207,419. And it's actually slated to go up again at the end of between September and October. They're looking at another 30% increase in the cost of ambulances across the board for everybody. So, but going back to the reason for this is if we were to take the patient compartment off of that and put it on our new chassis, eventually when the chassis wears out, it's about $136,000 to do that, which is cheaper than the Type 2 ambulance, and it's also cheaper than buying a whole new ambulance. That's liter, that's a unit 18. So that's another option that we have for Unit 18. When Unit 18 comes to the end of its lifetime, I would suggest that we do that versus buying a new one, and that's the same thing.
That's the $96,000 quote that you gave us this morning?
Yes.
Okay.
So that takes the box that we current box that we have, which is Unit 18, the 2016 Chevy that we have. That would take that box off and put a whole new chassis. So it would be driveline, gas, drive case, transfer, all that stuff, and we'll put it back on. It would also fix any issues that they have with electrical, anything like that. Because Leader built the box, it's easier for Leader to take it off and do everything because they know where everything is, they know the wiring and stuff like that. The new unit would go into Red Sky, which is a Demers. The other difference between the two, between Leader and Red Sky, is the condition of the units. You guys have seen 20, it's powder coated, it's got a lifetime warranty on the paint. Leader doesn't offer that. The interior is made out of aluminum with the Demers. Leaders are made out of particle board and they break. DEMIRS is including the premium care, so they're including a Ford warranty. Leader isn't including any of that stuff with their purchase price. So Leader did send me, I'm going to be honest, Leader did send me a quote for a Type 2 ambulance, but it wasn't anything close to what DEMIRS is offering. And once you started getting into the cost of what DEMIRS is offering, there was no comparison. It was considerably more money.
And a superior warranty.
Yeah, and a superior warranty. There's absolutely no warranty on the paint, no warranty on the chassis. They're not including the Ford warranty or anything like that.
On the Leader.
On the Leader units. So that's why I proposed the Type 2. The other reason for the Type 3 is if you look at the schematics, it has to do with patient care. On the Type 2 van style, patient care is hindered by the size of the ambulance. It's smaller. And a prime example would be last Sunday when I had to transport a patient going from Riding Point to Sierra Vista, and I literally had to stand over the patient with my knee in a cabinet to start an IV on the patient while we're driving down the road at 85 miles an hour with the lights and sirens going.
That would be a safety issue.
So that's the other reason I would vote for the bigger unit, is because of that. It's patient safety, it's crew safety. You know, we have to do things and we have to be able to get to the patient on both sides. With that small of an ambulance, we can't do that. It's dangerous. I've already broken one of the cabin doors with my head because of something similar to that. I popped it out, went around the corner, lost my balance, and popped out the door.
So the 4x4 that we acquired from the county,
yes,
that has a box set up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we're able to access the patient on the right side safely and effectively to be able to do proper patient care with no problem.
You know, I've worked out of both styles in my career. The Sprinter or Transit type, the van chassis, with the Type 2. Is fine for interfacility transfers, picking somebody up 5 minutes from the hospital, and that kind of thing. For what we do here, our crews need that space. For the long transport times, they're doing treatments, they're doing a lot more work on the patient. It really fits our mission here to have Type 3. Instead of the Type 2.
Plus, the addition of the power gurneys in the price has driven the price up as well.
Correct. We've installed, I know that we put in a request for the power load systems through grants. I had them include that in the cost of this unit so that it would be financed at the same time the unit was financed, so that it wouldn't be an additional cost on top of that. Now, if we took that out, then obviously the cost would go down, and we would just go back to power gurneys and manual loading. And that's an option that we have. We can remove that and reduce the cost of the ambulance. But since we've been trying to get them on grants, I figured, and it seems to be the way that everybody's going to save injuries on the employees, it seemed to make sense to include that in the cost of the financing of the ambulance to me.
And once we have our place in line,
We can delete it, yes.
But we don't, and we don't lose our place in line.
Correct.
And what's the price of the power gurney? Is it about 20-something thousand?
It's $47,000, about $47,000 with the hydraulic.
For the whole system.
The little system that goes with it.
Okay.
So we have it listed at 22. I think I have to double check with DEMIRS because that's supposed to be the cot and the gurney. But now I'm wondering, looking at what Leader put in, if she included the cost of the cot and the gurney system or just the load system itself.
Okay.
So I do have to check on that. And I'll get back to the board on that. But that's something that we can adjust and move around.
Yeah, all of these things, besides just being operationally a good idea for the crews, you know, power load systems, the factory handles, Tim's done a great job of research. It's also a cost savings to the district. The American insurance industry estimates that for each back injury of an employee, it costs a minimum of $50,000 at a bare minimum. For the cost to the employer, so it's risk prevention or risk reduction. The Type 3s, because the remount feature will save us money over time. We can remount the box cheaper than buying a brand new Type 2.
Okay, but are you asking us now to make a decision about future ambulances? when we buy them up there, that we will no longer buy the van type.
Correct. That's my recommendation, is that we go with the recent acquisition of the Unit 21. Now we have two modulars or Type 3s in our fleet. I think that we should continue that trend.
Okay. The agreement that you're asking us to approve locks in an upside risk of price increases, okay, and we would get delivery of this ambulance 15 to 18 months from now?
Correct.
Something like that. Okay. Does the agreement also provide for, should there be a price decrease, that we would reap that at that point?
I asked her that, and she said she would have to look into it, and she hasn't gotten back to me. But the likelihood of a price decrease is slim to none.
Then she shouldn't have a problem putting it in.
Yeah. Right. I can reach out to her and ask her that question. I think it's a very. I've asked her that question. I haven't got an answer, but
I would like that to be included.
Okay.
Yeah. One other. I may be stating the obvious, is if we were to wait, not only would there be a likelihood of a price increase, but let's say we waited a year to get in the queue, then we're still 18 to 24 months out to get the delivery. So we're delaying replacing an ambulance in our fleet, and that could be an issue. We've got a couple of aging ambulances that are going to need attention within that time period.
And I think that, like I said before, and maybe I'm beating it to the horse, but I think going to the Type 3 it's going to be expensive at first, but in the long run, it's actually going to save the district money. San Luis Ambulance currently does this with their fleets. They're able to get their ambulances reconditioned at Leader, and they can get 4 to 5 remounts before the box has become a point that it's just no longer salvageable. And you can see the cost. I mean, that ambulance that I gave you the $96,000 remount for originally cost the district over $200,000 when it was new. And that includes, there is some body damage that needs to get addressed with that unit, so that includes fixing that. He came out, actually took pictures, and before he did that, he took pictures. There's certain areas where the paint has chipped and water has gotten in between seams. And so even though it's an aluminum body, and aluminum doesn't rust, it has what they call electrolysis, which basically eats away the aluminum like rust. So there are some sections of Unit 18 that have that. The remount will address those, repaint the box, reseal everything, upgrade the wiring, stuff like that. So when 18 comes to the end of its lifespan, that's what I would like to do. The price isn't a locked-in price, because obviously it's a quote. But 18 is going to come to the end of its lifespan in the next 2 years, probably. So that's a viable option that the district has and would be able to have continuously with the box-style ambulances, to be able to just buy chassis. And we don't have to buy a chassis from them. We can go out and research, find our own chassis, purchase it ourselves, and have it shipped to the manufacturer, and they'll put it on themselves. So we might even find a better deal. We might find somebody who's willing to work with us.
Any other questions or discussion? Okay, I would entertain does our public have any questions or discussion? Okay. That forestalled Jeff reminding me that I have to ask for public comment. all right, well, I would entertain a motion then to approve this.
I'd like to make a motion that Tim proceed with arranging for future purchase lease with Demers, correct?
Correct.
For a Type 3 ambulance.
And I will make sure that we have that
with
worded added into the contract.
For allowing price decreases.
Correct.
Yes.
Second.
Okay, Bill Rice second. Any further discussion? Simone, would you care to take a roll call vote?
Okay. Katie Catterall?
Yes.
Bill Rice?
Yes.
Lori Lear?
Yes.
Celia Montalvo?
Yes.
Diane Kuba?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Moving on to E4, I guess what, based on what you said earlier, Lori, we need to move this to August? Or no, to a special board meeting.
Special board meeting, yes.
Okay, so we'll just move to special board meeting, date TBD. Okay, and then number 5. Review of draft district COVID-19 mandatory vaccination policy and letter to employees. Now, let me just preface this by saying I asked Mike to move up providing a draft of the vaccination policy so that we as a board could discuss, recommend changes, and the only thing that I really need the board to do this time is approve the proposed letter to employees that we want to issue this Friday.
Yesterday, the governor came out with new mandates.
Yes.
For both health care workers and state employees.
Yes.
Okay. How does that new mandate fit into this?
Okay, well, I've read the new mandate, and as far as I know, the district is complying with that mandate because, number one, when employees report for work, their temperature is taken. Number two, if they are not vaccinated, they get tested, is it weekly, Tim?
They don't currently do the testing as long as they are not symptomatic or anything like
okay.
that. They are required to wear a mask when they're outside of the office, when they're outside of their room.
Right, so now what we'll have to do is we'll have to implement weekly testing.
Correct.
So do we have test kits?
We don't. We'll have to look and see. I have to go back and see what test kits, if there's a requirement on the test kits, because I know that there's the rapid test kit, which has got about a 50% success rate of actually diagnosing. There's a lot of false negatives, but then there's also a lot of false positives with that rapid test kit. So we have to find out which one, if any, that they're mandating and how we go about doing that. The other thing is the cost. The kits are about $27 a kit. So that's going to be a significant cost to the district for every time we test it, for every week when we have to test an employee.
Yeah, I've been tracking this, as you know, David. And the governor's executive order yesterday, came out, looked over. I'm looking for clarity on some of these issues. It hasn't been sent down through the channels quite yet as far as the logistics of here's how you need to do this. So I'm trying to clarify that and get a wrap my hands around that. We've got some logistical issues of how do we test our employees. Then the CDC dropped a memo yesterday that one of the tests is not reliable and should not be used. So I need to figure out how that, which test do we use, like Tim said, because the one that has been widely used is now deemed as unreliable. So there's a lot of moving parts here. And cost, the governor did not allocate any funds to fund this this process. So I need to find out what the financial impact is to the district to comply with this order. We have some time. It's not implemented today. We have till, I think it's August 23rd to comply. So I hold not a lot of time, but I hold time to try to get some good answers for you. And I will. And perhaps maybe that's something we could put on that special board meeting in the next week or two when I know more.
So might I suggest that you contact both county EMSA and public health to see if
yes.
they have the test kits available
yes.
And that maybe at a discounted rate, if not for free?
Right. Yeah.
And
all of those things.
And my reading was that for some healthcare workers, they may need to be tested twice a week.
Yes. It talks about that, but it doesn't specify which one. So,
yeah. So
I need to find out how does this apply to EMTs and paramedics?
Right.
And these are all very good questions I'm trying to get answers for. But.
Well, I had someone approach me the other day to see about getting tested because he was afraid that he might have contracted COVID, and it turns out that he did not. The test came back negative. But He actually was able to get tested at the San Luis Obispo Vets Hall, and he said he was in and out in 15 minutes.
Yeah, there are certain testing locations that you can go in and out with. Morro Bay has one, their Vets Hall, San Luis has one. EMS personnel right now, though, have to make an appointment and go to county mental health or county health department to be tested if we have a possible exposure, because the county then tracks that employee, and then they also have to do contact tracing with everybody that they've been in contact from the date that they might have been exposed to the following 2 weeks, you know, prior to their testing.
One of the other questions that I'm trying to find out is, does this apply to our full-time employees, or does it also include part-time? We have part-time employees that work here once or twice a month. If they're being tested at their full-time job, do we need to test them here? Yada, yada. So more questions than answers at this point, but I will find out. We'll get it addressed.
But anyway, I think Bill's original question was, is the policy that's presented here consistent with what you're talking about, or are we just simply addressing the need for our staff to get vaccinated? And once they are vaccinated, then there's no testing required.
This, well, even that is there's questions about that, because, again, the recent information that's rolling out, the CDC made a comment on that. There was a thing that said that if you're vaccinated, you still should wear a mask. So it changes day by day.
Well, yeah, if you come in patient contact, right? I mean, all of our EMTs are required, our EMTs and paramedics are required to.
For the general public, there's these things that roll out, and we try to filter and figure out what does it mean for our employees. But yeah, I believe that this draft policy it works hand in hand with some of the stuff that's going on. But there may be other, there was, may not cover everything. What the governor's done and other folks may not cover everything that this covers. I think there's gaps here and there. So it's a challenge. This was simply a draft to say that if and then the key element is, if it's FDA for full FDA approval is achieved, then the board could mandate vaccinations to the personnel. So, and again, some of the mandates that you've seen already in the news at other places, none here locally that I've seen, but it's some of the mandates that have been imposed by hospitals or other employers do not specify FDA approval.
Do not specify what?
FDA approval.
Oh, FDA approval, correct. Well, it's like the Houston hospital.
Right.
I just saw yesterday where they have 98% of their employees are now fully vaccinated. The 2% that are not have fallen into one or the other exception that is covered in our proposed policy as well.
Right.
Either medical condition or firmly held religious beliefs.
May I comment, Peggy?
Sure.
A couple of things. One, just because you made me think of it, this week the University of California in its entirety announced that it would be mandating vaccines ahead of FDA approval. I don't know if that includes the Cal State system or not, but just as an aside. Second, I wanted to note that, and I have the governor's memo in front of me. My reading is that the new policy for healthcare workers will take effect on August 9th, and that healthcare facilities, such as hospitals, have until August 23rd. And then my final comment is that I don't know how difficult it would be, but since we do know that non-vaccinated employees will be subject to testing and some other requirements, I don't know why we wouldn't put that in the memo, because that is one thing I think we can be sure of, is that the things that were in the governor's statement will be required of our employees.
So you mean the memo that's going to go out on Friday?
Yeah, I would integrate integrate some of what the governor's memo from yesterday said into our memo just because it reflects some of current information, and it actually reemphasizes the importance of vaccinations by saying, you know, because the Governor Newsom has issued a directive that XYZ.
Okay.
But now, are we looking at removing the requirement that the FDA, that it be FDA approved?
Not in the current.
I wouldn't recommend. Well, go ahead, Celia.
Here's what I think about that. It sounds to me as though we're doing a two-step, that we want to get this memo out right now, and that we're going to vote to implement the policy at a subsequent meeting.
Yes.
So perhaps we could be more silent in this memo on the FDA approval issue and make that decision when we're addressing the adoption of the policy itself, because as Mike indicated, things change. It may be much more commonplace for other employers in our local areas who have dumped that gun. So I would like to have the flexibility by sort of not addressing that in this memo.
Okay. So on the second page at the top where it says, assuming that one or more of the existing COVID-19 vaccines is fully approved by the FDA, the CCHD may be adopting a new policy relating to mandatory COVID such and such. Okay.
Yeah, I would just take out the parenthetical and just say we may be adopting. And then we can discuss that, see where things stand.
Okay.
Some of the other moving parts on all of this, of course, is it's being reviewed by legal, by Jeff Henry, as this rolls along, and labor as well through Bill Avery and SEIU. So, and you know, Cecilia brings up good points of it, all of this that we're doing or considering doing, considering these actions, may become a moot point if they become mandated by the state or federal government or other entities. And my primary concern has been along this pathway is liability to the district. If we make an action, then we own it. But if the state or feds make an action, it does alleviate some of that risk, I believe. And Jeff can chime in on that. He's the one that's more knowledgeable.
Well, and like I said it before, I am very concerned about the liability associated with one of our community members becoming infected.
Right. Yeah, that we've considered that, and I've had some conversation about that. As far as we're aware, that we have not had a case of that. I haven't been able to locate a case nationally in the EMS system where that has occurred. Not to say it's not a risk, but I'm not saying that. But it appears that the risk is low of that occurring, of a patient, you know, contracting the disease from one of our employees. And primarily because they do a great job of protection. They wear their PPEs, they do all the things that are in our policies to keep the patient safe from any contagion, not just COVID.
You know, I think it's too bad we can't do a survey. I would really love to hear what Cambrians would like in terms of the people that come into their home to take care of them when they're ill, whether or not they would prefer that people be vaccinated. I think you'd get a different answer.
Well, what I mean, I have talked to a variety of people, and consistently they say they want them vaccinated. So
it's an ethical responsibility as a healthcare worker.
Sure.
And you don't want me to start spouting off my personal belief, but you have an ethical responsibility to the community as a healthcare worker.
Understood.
One question I have is whether or not this policy on vaccination should apply to administrative staff or just first responders.
I believe it applies to all of us.
I agree.
I don't think we make exceptions.
Okay. No.
So today we're not approving a policy, we're just approving a letter.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and it will be modified to include
what we discussed.
What we just discussed, and what I'm comfortable doing is redrafting it and sending it to all of you, or Mike will send it to all of you, and then you reply To Mike only, so as to comply with the requirements of the Brown Act.
Works for me.
Okay. Yes, Jeff?
President, this is Jeff. So that would, let's not be, do it that way. Perhaps that Mike could just send it out to everybody with the additions, but without the serial communication.
It could be a serial meeting is what he's referring to.
Well, that's what I'm trying to avoid by having Mike sending it out, asking for responses only to Mike.
Yeah.
How is that? Not a reply all.
Yeah, it's not a reply all. So how is that a violation?
Well, Mike would be taking a consensus of the board through a serial communication. I don't like it.
So what is your preference?
My preference is that you have Mike send it out as a draft and let it be. I think he has directions. I've given directions.
And if he sends it out as a draft, do we have the ability to comment on it back to Mike?
No, because then you're making changes through Mike.
Without public comment?
I know it's not ideal.
Okay, can we agree on the changes we made today and Iggy redraft the letter, including those changes, and we approve it and send it out?
That would be the best way to do it.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with that. I think we've been clear about the changes. They're not numerous.
Yep.
Well, the only thing that I would do is I'm going to reword the part about being fully approved by the FDA as a condition of policy issuance, and I will integrate the testing, weekly testing requirement for unvaccinated employees from Governor Newsom's directive of yesterday. So those are the two items that I plan to do. Anybody have any objection to that? Hearing none, that's how I will do it then. And then it is going to be signed.
I hate to state the obvious, but if you get any great news from CCRC, we would be happy to have you add that too.
Yes. Okay. All right, so add Cookie Crock. I mean, I can add the Cookie Crock gift certificates. The worst that will happen is that we'll get hit with $3,400 to our budget. We'll just pull that out of the facilities budget if we need to.
Oh, no problem.
Okay. I'll put it in there because it doesn't really matter who pays for it. Either we'll pay for it or the Croc will pay for it. Okay, so I'll add that as well.
And if not, I'm sure they'll give you some discount on it. I can't imagine that they wouldn't.
Right. Okay, that's what I'll do then. And does anybody have any comments that they'd like to share with Mike on the proposed policy? Okay, if you change your minds, make sure you communicate them well in advance of our August meeting. Well, I think we have come to the end of our agenda. And so, with regards to declaration of future agenda items, so far I've got that. Well, anyway, go ahead. Tell me if you have any agenda items that you'd like to declare at this point.
For the August report.
Right. So it'll be the policy, COVID-19 vaccination policy.
We'll provide a employee recognitions proposal.
Okay.
What did Lori just say?
An employee recognition program or a proposal for that.
Lori, I can't hear you.
She's saying employee recognition program that we talked about earlier.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, as a matter of closed session, we're going to be doing the administrator's annual review. And so I will send out the forms for that that you'll send back to me. So that'll be closed session. Anything else? Okay, well, hearing nothing. I didn't do as well as Bill did in the last meeting, but close.
Pretty good.
I declare that the meeting is adjourned at 10:10 a.m. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.